Welcome to this episode of Priestly Passion, where I speak with Catholic priests in the Archdiocese of Galveston, Houston. Today I'm speaking with Father Rodney Armstrong, who serves at Our Mother of Mercy Catholic Church, located in the historic Fifth Ward area. Father, thank you for agreeing to take out this time from your busy schedule.
You're welcome.
So, interesting thing is, like I was saying before our recorded interview, is that I didn't know Fifth Ward had any. I mean, I was familiar with some of the churches in Fifth Ward, Catholic churches, mm-hmm. but I was only familiar with Our Lady of Sorrows down the street. So to hear that this is like another church that I know is really interesting. And in fact, one day on the Holy Day of Obligation at the Co-Cathedral, somebody invited me to come here, now that I'm thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And so he said he sings in the choir. Or do you have a choir here?
Yeah, we have several choirs here.
Yeah.
And the 11 o'clock choir is our young adult choir.
Yeah, it was 11.
The 11 o'clock mass. And then we have a choir for our 8 o'clock mass, which is composed of some of our older parishioners, not necessarily young adults, of course. And then we have a children's choir that sings once a month here at Our Mother of Mercy.
Wow, that's totally different from what I normally hear from at different parishes about choirs and stuff. So that's really interesting. So we're going to get started. So the first question that we start off with is always, how long have you been an ordained priest?
I've been an ordained priest 28 years this coming May. I came to priesthood by a rather strange way. I was a practicing attorney in the city of New Orleans, and after about 6.5 years of practicing law, I made the decision to change careers, basically. That decision was impelled by my becoming much more active in my home parish in the city of New Orleans. And as I began to get more and more active in my home parish, I began to consider a priestly vocation. And as God would have it, I responded to the call. And here I am 28 years later. Pastor here at Our Mother of Mercy in Fifth Ward.
Right. So did you notice like the discerning call to know that to transition from law to the priesthood? What was that like?
Oh, a struggle. It was really a struggle. For 3 years, I struggled with the idea of switching careers, basically, and putting aside all of that education that I had planned, and all of the dreams and goals that I wanted to accomplish as an attorney to become a priest. That was a struggle. It was not easy. And I did things that, I can't go to the seminary and become a priest. I just bought a new car. I just did this or I just did that. I can't do that. And I realized it was kind of fighting the notion of becoming a priest and knowing that if you make this change, this is totally going to change your life. Mm-hmm. But eventually God wins out, at least in my case he did. I surrendered and decided to give it a shot. Mm-hmm. Okay, see what this call is about and see if you have what it takes to become a priest.
So you touched a lot on like sacrifice, and that question gonna come more up at the end when we about to wrap up the interview. So I'm gonna reserve my comments for that. So what did you end up studying in seminary?
Well, I grew up in a Josephite parish, and that means that my parish was conducted by the Josephite Fathers and Brothers. Interestingly enough, the Josephite Fathers and Brothers are the only religious community in these United States whose specific mission is to African American Catholics in the African American community. Mm-hmm. And so that I knew that if I was going to enter priesthood, the Josephite Fathers and Brothers was the route I needed to go, because they were the only ones that could assure me that I would always work in the African American Catholic community, and thus I would be stationed in the African-American community, mm-hmm. which is exactly what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. Have you read, I mean, out of curiosity, have you ever read Brother Cyprian Davis's History of Black Catholics in America?
Yes, I'm very familiar with Cyprian Davis's book. And he talks about many of the struggles of, you know, African-American, Roman Catholic priests of African-American descent, particularly those who joined majority white communities and the kinds of struggles that they had in journeying to priesthood. My journey with the Josephite Fathers and Brothers was quite different, mm-hmm. simply because we were an interracial community whose mission was to serve African-American Catholics. So the Josephite Fathers and Brothers welcomed indigenous candidates from the mission that they served to join them in serving in the black community. So my journey was quite different. I did not have the struggles that some have or have had in, you know, all white communities, where they were maybe one or two blacks in the community and the mission that those communities served. It was quite a different journey.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the religious order that you're part of is specifically caters to African-Americans of Catholics of African-American descent.
Right.
And you've been a priest for almost 28 years, which is a great accomplishment. What ways have you been directly involved with the ministry of Catholics of African-American descent?
Well, just by being a pastor in a black parish, mm-hmm. you know, you deal with your people sometimes on a different plane, because you have to understand the culture of the people you serve. As one out of the culture, I have insights into it, you know, sometimes that, you know, maybe, you know, a guy not of the culture may have, mm-hmm. you know, but having grown up in the culture, I do have some insights into it. But just being a leader, a congregational leader in a black parish, you know, you identify with the people. In many instances, differently, you deal with your people, knowing your people a little more intimately because you are yourself, you know, an African American Catholic, right. you know, who happens to be a priest.
Right. So, I guess a question I always wonder about serving in a parish with Catholics of African-American descent is, where do you find, like, the fine balance between, because I know, like, we African-Americans, we come to the table with, like, so much music and culture and dance and song, and we have to, and I know as a priest, you have to stick to, like, the Roman Missal, the format how it's supposed to go. So where do you find that balance of, like, incorporating, like, Catholics of African-American descent's unique gifts that they can bring verse with the format of the holy sacrifice of the Mass?
That has been a journey in itself, and it has been a journey that has evolved over the years. Mm. And one of the things we need to remember is that one of our past popes, John Paul II, clearly stated, "Let all cultures give their gifts of their cultures to the church," realizing that the church needed to accept the cultures of various communities and what have you. And so for me, there is no dichotomy, if I may use that term, between being African-American and being Catholic. Mm-hmm. Let me further explain that. I think you can be both authentically black and authentically Catholic. You know, it's not I have to choose this as opposed to this. You know, you incorporate the culture in its music and what have you, its movements within the liturgy appropriately. You know, you don't just break out in song in the middle of nowhere, because that's not the Catholic Church. But you can incorporate, you know, the music of African Americans within the culture. One of the things that I insist on as a pastor, that we, when we incorporate our music, we make sure that it is appropriate music in the Mass. You know, we don't denigrate the liturgy by incorporating inappropriate music in the Mass. And there's a whole genre of music out there, from gospel music, you know, to, you know, even, you know, current music in today's, the genre of spirituals, if you will, or the I'm trying to recall the genre that My 11 O'Clock sings in, because it's kind of a contemporary, gospel. You know, it's kind of a contemporary gospel. But even within all of that, you know, you can find music to incorporate into the liturgy that is authentically sacred, authentically Black, mm-hmm. and can be used in the liturgy. Mm-hmm.
So I know you serve, and I mentioned that you serve in the historic Fifth Ward area. In what ways do you as a pastor address the needs of like this very like needy community?
Well, one of the things we do here, we have a St. Vincent de Paul pantry, which the parish supports. And we provide food. We provide emergency assistance with, you know, electric bills and things of that nature. We provide clothing if necessary. And we'll even provide furniture. You know, we will partner with other organizations that do that kind of work and provide, you know, furniture if people, you know, are in need of those kinds of things. So, being a part of this community and living in the community, you know, you have to work with what's there. You have to work with our people who are here. And those are the needs in such a community. You know, people are in short supply sometimes of food, you know, a basic essential,
right?
You know, and so we try to provide, you know, that through our St. Vincent de Paul Society. Every Friday, we distribute food to clients who come and know that they'll be able to receive, you know, several bags of groceries that will help sustain them. You know, also, we as a parish are a part of the TMO organization, wherein we try to address the issues of our community along with TMO. The Metropolitan Organization is what that acronym stands for, TMO. And they work with us to help us address some of the political issues and the other issues that, you know, you would have in such a community. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's great news to know that you have leaders, and especially spiritual leaders in the Fifth Ward area, who are addressing like the multifaceted needs of the community. So a question I want to know is, since you've been ordained almost 30 years, like, in what ways have you seen the priesthood change, perhaps? That could be, like, large.
Priesthood has changed. But, you know, the tenets of the church have not changed. And what is expected of priests have not changed. But I do find that whereas we used to have minor seminaries and major seminaries, and we would recruit kids that right out of 8th grade at 14 years old, those minor seminaries have gone by the wayside. We, as a community, the Josephite Fathers and Brothers, we don't really focus in on candidates right out of high school anymore. We want candidates who have some life experience. Generally, we're looking for candidates who are college graduates and are looking to move in the direction of priesthood, and even some second career and third career candidates we're willing to, you know, take if they meet the criteria. And of course, in this day and age, with all of the clergy sex abuse going on, certainly that has shed some light, hopefully, on some things that just should not be and should not have happened. And, you know, yet they did, and the church has to take responsibility for some of that. But I try to emphasize to my parishioners and anybody that I talk to about these kinds of things happening today is that is not what the church stands for. And I think most of us understand that is not what the church stands for. Have we had some bad actors? Yes. Does the church owe its Catholic faithful an apology? Yes. Can we do better in recruiting, you know, candidates? Yes. Are there bad actors in other professions? Yes. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, I don't make excuses for these situations that are happening today, but I try to emphasize, as I said to my parishioners and anybody I talk to, we know that this is not what the church stands for. We've had, like I said, some bad actors. We've had some poor management on the part of some of our hierarchy, and I'm talking about bishops and archbishops and some of the things that were done in terms of some of this. But it is not what the church stands for. And so we got to remember that it is not what the church stands for. And we also need to remember the good the church has done. The church has done a lot of good.
So the next question is, as Christians, we are called to serve and love and be representatives of Christ. How do you carry out your vocation as a priest and love every day?
Well, I think every day that I get up and I am a priest, you know, I go about the business of carrying the message of God and Christ, not only to my congregation, but wherever I'm called to serve and to the world in general. And so I believe I carry that out by not only the work that I do in the course of the day, but also the compassion that has to be shown for the people that you serve and the people that come in contact with you. You know, it's nothing for people to knock at the door sometimes in need of assistance. And we try to, you know, answer their needs or respond to their needs without question as to whether or not they're Catholic. You know, we don't ask that question. They have a need, you know, and if we can respond to that need, then we try to respond to it. You know, in serving the poor and those who would be considered marginal in society, and as a pastor in a predominantly or majority African American Catholic parish, you know, I am called to serve the poor. You know, and I serve the poor as a Josephite priest out of love for God and the church. You know, my community is a diverse community in terms of economic status. I have some well-off parishioners, you know, in my congregation, and I have some poor parishioners. You know, so we try to serve the needs of all of our parishioners, but particularly the needs of the poor. You know, you got to remember that Christ had a preference for the poor. Mm-hmm. You know, and in that preference for the poor, he showed his love from God the Father, you know, for that. You know, and I think as a priest, that's what I am called to do. And I do my best to do that every day I wake up and put my collar on. Mm-hmm.
So piggybacking on like this emphasis on assisting the poor and going and tying it in with saints, do you have any favorite saints that you have read about or you look to for intercession daily?
Of course, Saint Joseph, who is the foster father of Jesus. Mm-hmm. That's our patron saint of the Josephites, and Saint Joseph colors our ministry and trying to imitate how he served Christ as a foster father in love. You know, so we kind of try to mimic the qualities of St. Joseph, you know, in our service to the poor, you know, and also I from my roots, I have a devotion to St. Jude. St. Jude was a devotion that was passed on to me from my family. St. Jude is the saint of hopeless and impossible cases. And sometimes people can feel like they're in hopeless and impossible cases, or that they are such an impossible case for their dire circumstances of life. And, you know, that's one of my favorite saints as well, St. Jude. And I pray to St. Jude on a daily basis, or try to, in asking for intercessions for, you know, difficulties and people in difficulties and sometimes what we're experiencing. You know, if you're not familiar with St. Jude, Thaddeus, you know, I recommend him to you highly. Mm-hmm.
So I know you mentioned a lot about intersecting, you know, the African-American heritage and culture with Catholicism. Do you have any, like, potential saints or figures that you that are Black and Catholic that you admire in America or African saints across the world?
Exactly. There are a number of Black Catholics who are up for canonization. Mm-hmm. One happens to be Henriette DeLille, who was a founder of the Holy Family Sisters down in New Orleans, a religious organization, religious order of Black women. Admire her life and the time that she, you know, established the Holy Family Sisters and what she had to go through in the 1800s. Trying to be a Black religious. Imagine that in the 1840s and 50s. There is Mother Mary Lang, who founded the Oblate Sisters of Providence in Baltimore, Maryland, another order of Black nuns back in the early 1800s, 1827. I believe that community was established. Imagine, this is prior to the Civil War.
Right.
You know, and you got Black women coming together and forming a Catholic religious order of nuns and trying to serve, you know, the slaves, literally. Slaves and, you know, poor Blacks in the city of Baltimore, you know, where it was illegal, you know, to teach Black people to read and write. Same thing with Henriette DeLille, you know, teaching young Black kids, you know, of various backgrounds, some freed, some not, you know, to read and write when it was against the law to teach Black people to read and write, you know.
Pierre Toussaint also.
Yeah.
He was prior to the Civil War.
Right. I was thinking about Pierre Toussaint. And also Augustus Tolton and the life of Augustus Tolton. If you have not read the life of Augustus Tolton, you got to read that, you know, and the you know, from slave to priest, you know, it is an amazing story.
Yeah, it's a remarkable story.
Yeah, I saw the play when it was touring. I saw it in Beaumont. It was in Beaumont at Lamar University, and I did not miss the opportunity to see. Although I knew of his life and I knew the story of his life, but it was interesting to see the play. Those are just a few, you know. But they were extraordinary. Devout and holy people of African descent who, despite the obstacles that were placed before them, you know, moved forward because they had faith. They had faith in God, faith in Jesus, you know, and they moved forward and doing what they believed they were called to do. Remarkable stories.
So since we're on the topic of saints and we talked about saints or figures.
People who are possibly candidates for canonization.
Yes. Right. And so my patron saint was, or is, St. Peter Claver. Mm-hmm. And
The slave of the slave.
Right. And so when I immediately read his little short bio in my 365 Saint book, mm-hmm. and I immediately picked up his autobiography, mm-hmm. and I read about how he gave so much dignity to like newly arrived slaves from Africa.
Right.
And I just thought that was
He's amazing. A Jesuit priest right. himself. But he committed himself to those Africans that were arriving in slave ships. Mm. And as a matter of fact, the Josephite Fathers and Brothers, we have used St. Peter Claver, who is one of our patron saints. We have used him and named many of our parishes, several of our parishes, after him. And of course, there is an organization of fraternal Catholic men in the church mm-hmm. called the Knights of St. Peter Claver. Mm-hmm. You know, founded by two Josephite priests and three laymen in, I believe, Mobile, Alabama, mm-hmm. back in the early 1900s. The Knights of St. Peter Claver exist in many Josephite parishes. I'm a Knight of St. Peter Claver myself. You know, and we look at, you know, the work that they've done over the years and why they were established. They were established because we weren't allowed at a certain point in time in history mm-hmm. to become members of the Knights of Columbus. So we had to establish our own, you know, fraternal organization of Catholic men. Ugly side of history, ugly side of history of the United States, ugly side of history of the Catholic Church, you know, but it was what needed to be done at the time, and it was. You know, St. Peter Claver, the Knights of St. Peter Claver exist today, mm-hmm. and is a very active fraternal organization of Catholic men. You know, should we forgive the times? I certainly think we have to forgive those misguided persons of that time. But you know, you have to take everything in the context of history and the time that it occurred, you know. And yes, you move beyond, you know, some of that and you have to be forgiven, you know. But I think that, you know, I'm loyal to the Knights of St. Peter Claver because of that background and because I stand on the shoulders of those two Josephite priests who found it absolutely necessary. We have to do this. We have to establish a Catholic fraternal organization for black men because we're not allowed to have our men go and become members of Knights of Columbus. Mm-hmm. Now, that's the history. Some people don't want to be reminded of that. And I'm not saying that you throw that in people's face all the time, but that's the history. That's the history, and that's, you know, and we have to at least acknowledge that that's the history, because we all know that's the history. Mm-hmm. So you have to acknowledge, and then you move on, you know. But that's why the Knights of St. Peter Claver exist today.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of great history about the organization.
Yes.
And one question you talked about sacrificing earlier and how you had to make a decision between law and joining or figuring out and discerning the priesthood. And so like today, young adults or young males who have that same similar struggle, like, oh, I want to potentially get married, or I want to have a family, or I want to pursue this career. They feel like that's like a, they feel the priesthood is an unfair sacrifice perhaps. So what would you say to those young men who feel like it's like a not good enough sacrifice?
Well, I think first of all, in the discernment process, you have to try to figure out what is it that God is asking me to do? Mm-hmm. What is God calling me to? And I don't think that today's young men are that reflective of that question, because it's generally about what do I want to do? You know, what is it I want to do? But I think you have to ask the question, this is what I want to do. What is God calling me to do? Mm-hmm. What is God asking me to do? And I think if you ask that question first, despite the fact that you want to pursue this, that, or the other, I think if you ask that question first and you get the answer to that question, you can't go wrong. Because God calls people to all kinds of vocations. Remember, we talk about the vocation to the married life, which you are a part of. We talk about vocation to the single life, because certainly there are people who are called to the single life. They're not called to married life, but they can still be faithful in the single life, and they can still do God's work in the single life. And then we talk about the vocation to religious life and to priesthood. So those are the three basic vocations we talk about. And you have to try to figure out, what is God calling you to do? You know, and once I think you answer that question honestly, you know, and if you feel like you have a vocation to the church as a priest, well, you got to answer, is God really calling me to priesthood? You know, and I think most of us who have answered the call, where we go back and we look at the signs in our lives that point to the fact that God was calling us to ministry, we you can see them. You know, and you can talk to 10 priests, and they will all give you stories about their life and how they felt drawn to the church and to priesthood, and figured it out for themselves. You know, so is it an unfair sacrifice? Not when you think about the fact that God calls each of us to a specific vocation. You know, and some of us are indeed called to the vocation to serve the church. Has God stopped calling? No. Have human beings and young men stopped answering and responding? Yes. They're, because we live in a culture that highlights that me attitude. And, you know, we live in a culture that highlights, well, you know, I need to be successful in this area of my life. I need to be a top-notch businessman or a top-notch lawyer or a top-notch MD. You know,
and I need to be happy.
You know, I'm happy. You know, I mean, I gave up a law practice to come to priesthood. Have I had some rough days? You bet I have. You know, has it been a roller coaster ride? At times it has. But by and large, I made the right decision for me. I made the right decision for me. And I have been happy in my service to the church as a priest, and I have had the opportunity to touch lives that I would never have touched had I stayed in the legal profession practicing law. You know, and I do it for the love of God and the love of the church. You know, and I have no regrets. I always try not to have any regrets about anything, but I have no regrets. You know, I practiced law for 6.5 years. You know, I was just getting started good. You know, so I don't know where that would have led, but, you know, God led me here to priesthood.
Well, that's a lot of a great perspective that you just brought to that question. So the final question ultimately is, what's the biggest piece of advice that you would give somebody who is discerning the priesthood or think they might be called to it?
You got to figure out where you fit. You got to figure out, because there is diocesan priesthood. There is religious life, where you go into certain communities and you don't have the right of ownership, and everything you have belongs to the community. There are communities like mine, the Josephite Fathers and Brothers, where we have the right of ownership, you know, of our personal things. So you got to figure out where you fit, you know, and the mission and where you think you're being called, you know. Not easy for people who are, you know, saying, well, I have this vocation. I think I have this vocation to priesthood, but where do I go? And you need to talk to other priests who can kind of help you along and help you figure out where you fit and where you need to go. For me, it was much easier because I came out of a Josephite parish. And so I knew, if I'm going to become a priest, I need to become a Josephite priest. Because those are the guys that were there for me and my family, you know, back in the days when, you know, it was kind of tough to serve in the black community. You know, so I need to give my life to that religious community whose men gave their lives for me and my family. So it was easy. It was an easy decision. There was no question in my mind. You know, if I'm going to become a priest, I'm going to become a Josephite priest. For others, it's not that easy. Got to figure out where they fit. So my recommendation and advice to them is to figure out where you fit. Do you belong in a monastic community, such as the Benedictines? You know, do you belong in an active community? Do you belong in a diocesan priesthood? You know, got to figure out where you fit and where you think you're being called. But I think after you figure that out, it's easy. It's easy. It's easier. Let me just put it that way. It's easier once you figure out where you fit. Mm.
Similar to embracing the marriage life.
Yes.
I feel like, well, I know for sure, as I was told my wife before, like you just said, once you figure it out, God will guide you in the way.
Yeah.
So once I realized that I wanted to be married, it seemed like God put all the necessary...
Like, and so you knew you were called to the married life and the marriage state. And that's fine. Mm-hmm. Everybody is not called to priesthood and religious life. We've got to have guys like you, good examples of being a family man, mm-hmm. you know, and being a father, you know, and exhibiting holiness within family life. As a father and a husband, you gotta have that. Everybody can't be priests. Everybody can't be sisters. Mm-hmm. But some are called that are not answering, you know. And it's just a question of listening to God and trying to hear God's voice speak to you. And I clearly heard that in them years where I was discerning whether or not I needed to, you know, do an about face and go into a second career. You know, I could clearly hear God's call, you know, and praise be to God, I answered. Because I had a choice. Mm. I didn't have to answer.
But you chose to answer in the affirmative rather than the
shut down. I could have said, oh, no, you know, he ain't calling me. I'm going down this road.
Well, that was all we had for the interview today, and I definitely thank you, Reverend Armstrong, for taking out your busy schedule as a reverend and doing this interview and giving them more education about what it means to be a priest and how to possibly discern effectively the call to the priesthood.
Well, I you're very welcome, and I hope I've been able to shed some light on some things for your audience and those who will listen to this interview.
Yeah, I definitely think a lot of people will benefit from the richness of experience of you being a Catholic of African American descent and like the whole liturgical diversity aspect that you mentioned. I think that's very crucial for a lot of people who want to know on social media that I speak to. Because I get that frequently sometimes. It's like the dichotomy of being a Black Catholic
Well, and we Josephites think of ourselves as the experts on Black Catholics in this country. We are the experts on Black Catholic because it is all we've done from the very inception of our community. It is all that we have done. It has been our sole ministry to minister to African-American Catholics. Mm-hmm.
Well, in sum, I definitely appreciate it. And I hope the listeners will pray some Hail Marys for you. And I definitely keep you in my prayers also for your vocation. Thank you guys for listening, and that's all.